Welcome to the HIV Australia podcast, a discussion about the community-led response to HIV. In this latest episode, Heather Ellis from Positive Women Victoria talks with Dr. Nenka Nicolo on ageing and menopause for women living with HIV.
Welcome everyone to Menopause for Women Living with HIV. My name is Heather Ellis. I'm the Communications and Engagement Coordinator with Positive Women Victoria, and I've been living with HIV for 26 years. I went through menopause at age 50. I was physically and emotionally a difficult time then. I knew nothing about menopause and no information was offered by my healthcare providers. But today there is a lot more knowledge, understanding and research. Our panellist this evening is Dr. Nenka Nicolo, who is joining us from London. We are extremely honoured. Nenka is with us today to share her expertise on menopause in regards to women living with HIV. Dr. Nenka Nicolo has been a Senior Global Medical Director at ViiV Healthcare since 2019 and has over 20 years of experience in HIV medicine. Prior to joining ViiV, Nenka was a consultant physician in sexual health HIV medicine in London, where she has worked since 2001. Her special interests include the sexual and reproductive health of HIV-positive women, particularly with regard to contraception and menopause. Nenka continues to do a monthly HIV menopause clinic in London, and she is the author of many peer-reviewed scientific articles and book chapters. Nenka also provided expert advice on the Guide to Menopause for Women with HIV published by the Sophia Forum in the UK. This guide goes into detail about menopause, and I really recommend you read it.
Thanks very much, Heather, and welcome everybody. I think menopause is a really important subject, and I guess you do too, otherwise you wouldn't be here. And it's really good that it's being discussed more than it used to be. I don't know what the situation is like in Australia, but certainly in the UK, it's now starting to be discussed publicly in more quarters than it used to be. But for many women, it still remains a sort of a taboo subject across many, many cultures. I'm very keen that it's discussed also by women living with HIV, and that women living with HIV can share their experiences. And also, hopefully, some women will feel comfortable to even speak about their experiences in the wider world, because I think it's important that people are aware of all experiences of menopause. But I do understand that women living with HIV have particular challenges about being open about their HIV status. So finding safe places for them to talk about their experiences, such as here with positive women, is a really fantastic thing. Menopause is my passion, so me, any questions that you have, and I'll do my best to answer.
Received a couple of questions that people have emailed to me. Is some research suggests that women living with HIV experience more severe menopause symptoms than women without HIV. Is this true, and why does that happen?
It's a really good question. And the data about this from studies are very mixed, and they're mixed because women living with HIV from one country to another are very different, and I'll explain what I mean. So most studies of women living with HIV come from the United States. So there's a very big study in the United States called the WISE study that's been collecting data and information on women living with HIV for many, many years. But we know that women living with HIV in America, in the United States in general, and this is a really gross generalization, but I'm generalizing to make the point. Many people living with HIV, women living with HIV in the United States, tend to be injecting, or either current or ex-injecting drug users, tend to be of lower socioeconomic status. And also tend to be African-American. And we know that these groups of people have significant disparities in their health, and so already have poor health. And so it's not clear whether when they start to experience menopause, their symptoms are related to underlying problems that they already have that menopause makes worse, or whether the menopause truly is worse in women living with HIV. But certainly we've done some work with women living with HIV in the UK that suggests that certain menopause symptoms may be worse in women living with HIV than in the general population. The thing is that there aren't studies that compare directly women living with HIV with women in the general population, but there is some evidence to suggest, for example, that genital symptoms may be worse in women living with HIV, that mental health symptoms may be worse, so that there may be more anxiety and depression, for example, and also what are called vasomotor symptoms, so hot flushes and sweat may be worse. But we know that many of those we know that women living with HIV have poor mental health anyway, in general. So exactly what's going on, we don't know. And unfortunately, there aren't a lot of studies of menopause, just generally. Menopause is an area that there's so little research on, and there's even less research in women living with HIV. So it's an area that I think we really do need to do some more about, particularly because over the next few years, there are going to be more and more menopausal women. Heather was telling me about when she was diagnosed. And, you know, when Heather was diagnosed, I think women were lucky if they saw menopause. And actually, menopause was the least of a woman's worries at that time. Yeah. And now women are living better, living longer. And so they're going to have a lot of time in menopause.
The other thing that really interests me that is about the low level of inflammation that is in our body. So this is even when we have undetectable viral load on ARVs. So with this low level inflammation, does menopause contribute to this inflammation? And what are the health impacts on that, you know, as we age? Like, you've got low level inflammation and then you've got like hot flushes from menopause. Is that a concern?
Great question. And another area that we need to do some more research in. So just a bit of background, just for people who might not know. So even when people have had a viral load that has been suppressed for a long time, so we know that if you don't have a suppressed viral load, so if HIV is multiplying, that there is inflammation. And the inflammation that you get from HIV that isn't controlled is the reason that rates of, for example, heart disease, problems with bone density, all the sort of complications that you get from HIV, even if you have a good CD4 count, come because of the inflammation that is a result of the body trying to fight the virus. And then when you suppress the virus properly with antiretrovirals, unfortunately, even though there's not much viral multiplication going on, there is still some residual inflammation that exists, which is probably related to the fact that the virus isn't completely eliminated. So even though it's really suppressed, it's still there. And the immune system recognizes it and still tries to fight it. And that inflammation that is the body trying to get rid of whatever is causing it harm also results in problems. And that's why, even though rates of heart disease, for example, are lower in people with treated HIV, they may be still slightly higher than in people in the general population. So that's one thing. But menopause itself is associated with inflammation. Aging is associated with inflammation. And so what we don't know is whether the effects of menopause, before menopause, women have very low rates of heart disease, stroke, and so on, low rates of osteoporosis, because they're protected by estrogen. And then when estrogen levels fall, those rates of heart disease and so on go up. And, you know, so initially, you know, it's really rare to hear about a heart attack in a 30-year-old woman. Whereas men do sometimes have heart attacks in their 40s, for example. Women generally don't. But after the menopause, rates of heart disease go up to levels as high as in men, and sometimes higher. And most people don't realize this. So women worry very much about breast cancer, but a woman is twice as likely to die of heart disease than breast cancer. And actually, heart disease is the biggest killer of women overall compared to anything. And so the menopause is a time of dream inflammation. But what we don't know, because there aren't studies, there need to be studies, is the menopause added? Is the inflammation caused by the menopause additive to that remains with treated HIV? Or does it not matter? We need to collect these data, but I think what we can take away is that it's really, really important for women approaching menopause to start thinking really carefully about their health generally, whether they're living with HIV or not, thinking about, how do I minimize the impact of menopause on my life as I go forward? I'm going to live to be an old woman, hopefully. The loss of estrogen causes loss of muscle mass, causes reduced bone strength. How do I make sure that my muscle mass, my bone strength are optimized before I go into menopause, so that I go into menopause as a healthy and into old age as healthy as I can? And I understand that you had a webinar on gut health, and gut health is something that's really important. So how do I exercise optimally? How do I eat right? And to get into the habit of doing this before you get into menopause, I think, is a really good thing to try to do.
So is it worth considering hormone replacement therapy to lower that level of inflammation, so we don't have low level inflammation from HIV in the background and then the inflammation from the menopause on top of that? So is it worth trying to eliminate that menopause inflammation from hot flushes?
So this is also a really good question. And so I just want to, so there's a lot of fear about HRT, and that fear generally is based on some old studies that suggested that HRT was harmful. But actually, the people who've done those studies and subsequent studies now, more current studies, have actually showed that a lot of those studies were flawed. But the problem was that when those studies were published, so at the time that those studies were being done, HRT had been found to be beneficial from many other studies. But then what happened was when those studies were published that suggested harm, a lot of women who were doing well on HRT stopped taking it, and people were scared to go on to it, and doctors were scared to prescribe it. And so rates of taking HRT fell tremendously and have never actually recovered, even though we now know that those data are flawed. Increasingly now, with newer data, people are starting to take HRT again. But it's always a personal choice. But for the vast majority of people, HRT is safe. And if you think about HRT, so the menopause is an estrogen deficiency state. So it's a hormone deficiency state. It's a bit like having an underactive thyroid. If you have an underactive thyroid, the answer is to replace the thyroxine hormone that you're not producing anymore. And it's exactly the same for menopause. And I think when you think about it in that way, that you're just replacing the estrogen that you have stopped producing or you're not producing enough of anymore, I think it then becomes sort of clearer about how important it is. A small number of women can't take HRT, women, for example, who have breast cancer or particular kinds of breast cancer, but actually, or who have some underlying medical conditions. But the vast majority of women can take HRT and can take it safely. So people shouldn't be afraid of it. I think it's important to research it, to understand it, to ask questions. But don't approach HRT from a position of, oh, this is a terrible thing to take, because it saves life, basically.
And hasn't it come a long way as well since those early studies? Like, I was reading about body identical HRT. Is that a safer way to take?
Exactly. So the older forms of HRT, I mean, the sort of most commonly used older form of HRT, of estrogen, was from horse's urine, from mare's urine. So it wasn't at all, didn't resemble human estrogen at all. But the newer forms of HRT are what you've described as body identical, which are, even though they're made in a lab, they are identical to the estrogen and progesterone that the ovaries produce. So if you were to analyze them in a lab, they would look exactly like what your body is producing. These newer types of HRT are much, much safer than the older kinds of HRT.
Myself, I went through menopause at 50, but fortunately I started taking HRT, and it was probably that horse's urine, estrogen, and I'm still taking it now, and I'm 57. So are women ever too old to take HRT if they're thinking, oh, well, I'm still going through hot flushes, I'm still having these problems?
Yeah, no, that's a really good question. And actually, the answer to that question has only recently become clearer. So in the older studies of HRT, so the original study where harm was demonstrated, in fact, the reason that there was a problem was because HRT was given to women of all ages, including women who probably shouldn't have had it. So the issue about harm with regard to HRT and heart disease is, after the menopause, I describe it as women's blood vessels become more like men. So the estrogen that makes them supple and lets blood flow easily through them goes away. And so they become sort of harder and less responsive. And usually after a woman's been menopausal for 10 years, by 10 years, that sort of, I guess, hardening of the arteries and so on has become established. And so it used to be thought that you shouldn't start HRT in a woman beyond 10 years after the menopause or after the age of 60, because potentially estrogen could be harmful if the blood vessels have already calcified, I suppose, for want of a better word. But a more recent study suggested actually that there may not be harm caused by this. It may just be that it's neutral. It might be a neutral effect, i.e. it doesn't harm, but it doesn't do any good. I think it's not completely clear yet, and I think we need to do more studies. So what I would say is that for a woman who's a woman under the age of 60, the risks are tiny. So if a woman is within 10 years of the onset of menopause or below the age of 60, risks are really, really minimal. Above the age of 60, if a woman still has symptoms, it's important to speak to a menopause specialist to decide what the best and safest thing to do is. And for some women, a low dose of HRT may be suitable, may be acceptable. But for other women, it may be thought, no, the risks are too great. And then other ways of controlling symptoms may then be suggest.
Right. Are there any studies on integrase inhibitors and menopause hormonal issues? So one of the ARV medications? Yeah.
So there aren't specific studies of there are very few studies of antiretrovirals in menopause at all. So most studies of antiretrovirals and hormones are studies looking at contraception. And so the data that we have about menopause, we kind of extrapolate from the data from contraception because the hormones are similar. They're not exactly the same, but they're similar. But we can't say for absolutely certain that the interactions are exactly the same. And that's why it's important to do these studies. But we know that certain types of antiretroviral therapies that are metabolized by different pathways to hormones don't have any interactions or shouldn't have any interactions and so should be safe. And so most integrase inhibitors should be safe with menopause treatments and they're also safe with contraception. There's one particular integrase inhibitor that has a booster in it. And so things with boosters, any antiretroviral therapies that have a booster or that are metabolized by an enzyme system in the liver that causes them to affect hormone levels should be ideally not prescribed. And, you know, it used to be the case in the very beginning when I started doing HIV medicine, antiretrovirals took precedence over everything. So, for example, if we had a patient who had a neurological problem and they needed to take some medicine for their neurological problem, we would say to the neurologist, do not touch their antiretrovirals. Find a neurological medicine that doesn't interact because you cannot do anything to the antiretroviral. And so that then restricted the sorts of medicines that people could have for their other medical conditions. And for a long time, this is again most appropriate to contraception, but also appropriate to menopause treatment. Women living with HIV didn't have the same options for contraception as women without HIV because there were so many interactions with antiretroviral therapy. But what I say now is we have so many antiretrovirals that don't interact anymore. Women should be allowed to use whatever contraception they want to use, and that we should be tailoring antiretroviral therapy to the hormones rather than to the other way around. Because what's really important is that women feel right, that they feel good. If they have issues about a risk of pregnancy or if they have menopause symptoms, it's really important to control those symptoms, because if you don't control those symptoms, their quality of life is really bad. And if quality of life is really bad, it affects how well you take your antiretroviral. So we're lucky now that we have lots of choice.
In, say, the UK, how many women living with HIV would be on HRT?
So we know that overall, and this may also be the case in Australia, so in the West, the United States and the UK, possibly in Australia, HRT rates generally are really low. So only about 20% of people, women, take HRT. And with women living with HIV, it's even less. So in the UK, there was a recent study that suggested that it was 5 to 10%. So very, very, very low rate.
That is low.
And it's sometimes because women have heard what other people talk, you know, other women talk about HIV, you know, because there is this discourse in the general public, which is HRT is not safe. And women living with HIV hear that as well. So I have women who come to my clinic and they say they have symptoms and I talk about HRT and they go, oh yeah, that sounds good. And then I see them again in 3 months and I'm like, well, what happened? They go, oh, I didn't take it because my friend said it causes cancer. But that happens in the general population as well. There is terror of HRT. Better about educating people about the real risks and then let women make a decision about whether they want to take it or not. And it's absolutely a woman's decision about whether she takes it or not, but it should be based on evidence. I mean, just thinking about weight gain in general, weight gain happens as people get older. It's just something that happens. It's interesting because a lot of people think that menopause causes weight gain, but it's actually not so much that menopause causes weight gain as that menopause causes a change in the distribution of fat. So women who were generally quite slim find that they start to gain fat weight around their tummy. And they get on the scale and they may not necessarily have put on a huge amount of weight, but they've just found that their body shape has changed. But overall, we know that both women and men gain weight as they get older. And menopause may cause some weight gain, but it's more about the distribution of fat. So we know that women living with HIV very often are diagnosed late because no one thinks about HIV. So they have symptoms for a long time. No one ever thinks, oh, we should test this lady for HIV. So they have all these symptoms. And many of these symptoms are like the symptoms of menopause. So they'll have flushes, they'll have sweats, they'll be tired, they'll have aches and pains and so on. And then they start treatment, whatever treatment, and they feel better. And then menopause comes and they start having those symptoms again. And so in my experience, what happens is they think, oh, gosh, my HIV is not controlled anymore. I've been taking my pills. Why is my HIV not controlled anymore? So they go to their HIV doctor and the HIV doctor does their viral load. No, your viral load's fine. It's not HIV at all. They go to the GP who, certainly in the UK, GPs don't know very much of HIV and are a bit scared of it. So they'll be like, oh, it must be your HIV. There's nothing wrong with you. We'll do some tests, but you're fine. And no one kind of clocks that this is menopause because the woman might still be having periods. And she'll often go back and forth between her HIV physician and her GP trying to understand what's going on. And then finally, either she or someone else will think, oh, yeah, she's 47. Maybe it's menopause. And then the penny drop. So that's one issue about menopause symptoms and HIV-related symptoms. You can sometimes get mood problems, particularly, that may be made worse by menopause because menopause is associated with mood problems. But there isn't any particular reason that any antiretroviral shouldn't be used in menopause, unless it's an antiretroviral that interacts with a hormone treatment. But it could be that your dose of estrogen isn't right yet, that you may need to have that reviewed, and it may be that the dose might need to be increased, for example. But it's important to maybe go back to the person who prescribed it and just have a chat and just make sure that you're having the optimal dose of estrogen.
From my own experience, when I suddenly realized I was going through menopause because of all the symptoms, I then thought, oh, I'll go on HRT. I'd read about that. And it was the estrogen and progesterone separate. Mm. So I took them as the doctor prescribed, and I just got all these side effects. My breasts swelled up. I had a rash all over my breasts, my front of my chest, and which was, I thought, it's the HRT. And so it was more like a trial and error. And I would talk to my HIV specialist about it, but they had no knowledge and they didn't want to have any knowledge. They weren't interested. And I sort of just had to figure it out for myself. It should never have been like that. And in fact, I'm now booked in to see a menopause specialist. And this is 7 years later that I finally decided. And it was only because the estrogen I'm taking, they're not making it anymore. So I have to go to another brand, another dosage. Yeah. I thought, well, now is the time to work all this out. Yeah. It's really a difficult situation because I should never have been in that. That should never have happened. I should have had the advice and maybe you should go to a menopause specialist, which I didn't even really realise existed because we don't. Until we come into menopause, we don't think about these things. We have no knowledge of it. Yeah.
Because no one talks about it. No one talks about it. Our mothers never tell us about menopause. We don't talk to each other about it. It's terrible. It's like the last taboo. I mean, a couple of things. That's really helpful to hear, Heather. A couple of things, just comments to make. I mean, the first thing to say is exactly what you said. You should not have to do that. You shouldn't have to try to help yourself. There are people who can help you, and you should be able to know who these people are and to be able to access them. One thing that I'll say is, in general, the principles of managing menopause in women living with HIV are exactly the same as the principles of managing menopause in women without HIV. And so if you were to go to your GP, so in the UK, most people, the doctors who prescribe HRT the most are GPs, and people only go to a specialist if there is some complicated thing. The trouble is that many GPs in the UK don't have training in menopause and don't know how to prescribe it, and also have the same fears that a lot of people have because of those older studies. So it's really hard in the UK for women to access someone who can give them HRT or talk to them about it. And there's a big movement now going on where all these celebrities are coming forward and saying, you have to do better, basically. So things are hopefully going to improve. So we have a similar situation to you, that women end up having to figure things out for themselves. But hopefully that will change. What I would say is that anybody who has menopause symptoms, go and talk to your GP. If they say, oh, but you have HIV, if you can, just say, that doesn't matter. Just talk to me how you would talk to somebody who didn't have HIV. And then if a GP then is worried about HIV, then just say, and here's the name of my HIV specialist. I know the HIV specialist will say, well, I don't know anything about menopause. But the only thing the HIV specialist needs to be able to tell the GP is whether the antiretrovirals are likely to interact with HRT or not. That's all they need to know. Mm-hmm. And then if there is no interaction, then they just be managed the way somebody without HIV is managed. In the UK, and I don't know whether this is the case in Australia, more HIV specialists are training in menopause. And so that is because we, you know, there are 30,000 women living with HIV in the UK at the moment, and a third of them are between the ages of 45 and 54, which is menopausal age. So 12,000 approximately. Oh. And Public Health England, who's the big public health body, predicts that in the next 10 years, there'll be another 10,000 women of that age group. This is an age group that's not going away. It's going to continue. So HIV physicians have to learn how to manage them, or at least have a way to refer them easily to specialists. Because it's not fair to let women suffer because we don't have training in how to manage them. It's not it's not fair.
In Australia, we're slowly getting more HIV specialists who are having, you know, getting knowledge about menopause. But it's also good to know that here we've got many menopause specialists that we can go to. But we might think, as women living with HIV, we might think, oh, we can't go to them because they don't know anything about the HIV together with the menopause and the HRT. But that's not true, is it? You know, we can go to a menopause specialist and,
And then just have communication between the menopause specialist and the HIV. And that way, both specialists will learn. The HIV specialist will learn about menopause and the menopause specialist will learn about HIV.
So win-win.
Yeah.
So you're saying, I was diagnosed after menopause. I occasionally have hot flushes. Do I need to take estrogen?
That's a good question. The most the likely cause of the hot flushes is menopause, which is estrogen deficiency. The choice about whether you take estrogen or not is yours. Medically, you know, speaking as a doctor, I would say that the reason that you have those symptoms is because you're not producing estrogen anymore, and the way to get rid of those symptoms is to have estrogen. But in order to make that decision, you should be aware of the risks and the benefits. And as I said, depending on your age and whether you have any underlying health problems, HIV is not an underlying health problem that will stop should stop you from having estrogen, then I would say yes, that's the way that you'll get rid of your symptoms. And the other thing also is that lack of estrogen puts you at risk of osteoporosis. The risk of osteoporosis is higher in women living with HIV, regardless of whether they take, whether they're menopausal or not. So you have HIV as a potential risk factor for osteoporosis, and then you have menopause. So as a woman aging with HIV, you have two risk factors for osteoporosis. And so it's important to think about that and to try to do as much as you can to reduce that risk. And estrogen prevents osteoporosis.
Is there a natural way to get estrogen or HRT other than taking sort of the body identical HRT?
Well, I mean, I guess I would go back and question what you mean by natural, because if body identical HRT is exactly the same as the HRT that you're producing yourself, what could be better than that, I would say. But there are other sources of estrogen. So there are plant-based sources of estrogen. So you may see advertisements for a soy-based product. The thing is that these alternative therapies that you might read about, they don't have the same safety data, for example. They haven't been looked at in clinical trials. They have not been compared to conventional hormone treatments to see, you know, so when the HRT that you get from your GP on prescription has been subject to rigorous clinical trials to, first of all, to show that they're effective, but also to show that they're safe. And a lot of alternative treatments, most alternative treatments haven't gone through those checks. So we don't know whether they're safe and we don't know whether they're effective. The other thing also is that there's a greater risk that they might interact with other medicines that you're taking. And finally, the amount of estrogen, so these estrogens are called phytoestrogens. Phytoestrogens are plant-based estrogens that occur in some plants, such as soya, as I said. But the amounts of estrogen in those in soya are tiny. So you have to consume a huge amount to get the same benefit. And it's not clear that you will get the same benefit. So I think if you're going to take estrogen, take it properly.
Yeah.
Is what I think.
Okay. Does menopause affect women of different ethnic backgrounds differently?
That is such a great question. You'd think it shouldn't, because, you know, estrogen deficiency is estrogen deficiency, menopause is menopause. But actually, when you look at studies of women in different parts of the world, some women can say that some symptoms are worse than others. For example, they've done some studies of Asian women in the UK. So I know that, so I think in Australia, when you refer to Asian, you generally mean people of Chinese background. In the UK, when we say Asian, we generally mean people from the Indian subcontinent. So it's quite interesting, but you know, Asia is a huge continent. And So the first question is, what does Asian mean? Because there's a multitude of different women. But women from the Indian subcontinent in the UK generally experience kind of more aches and pains with menopause than hot flushes. That's not to say that they don't get hot flushes at all, but the predominant symptoms tend to be aches and pains. And when you look at studies from the United States, African-American women tend to have very severe hot flushes, and the menopause transition lasts a long time. So on average, the menopause transition, so going from when you're perimenopausal, when you're starting to have irregular periods and your symptoms start, to when your periods actually stop, on average is about 4 years. In African American women, it averages about 7 to 10 years. We don't know why that is. When you look at women from South America, Hispanic women from the Caribbean tend to have more genitourinary symptoms than hot flushes. It's really weird. Nobody fully understands why. And then there's a really interesting study that was done comparing Greek women, and I think another one comparing Dutch women, with women from the Yucatan Peninsula in Mexico, Mayan women. And Mayan women don't report hot flushes. Well, one study at least showed that Mayan women don't report hot flushes at all, whereas European women tend to really significantly suffer from hot flushes. Why is that? Is it that Mayan women live in a hot climate, so even if they experience hot flushes, they're already hot anyway, so they don't really notice them? Or is it that they don't experience hot flushes at all? It's not really clear whether there truly are differences, although it does seem as if there are, and why these differences occur. But the reason that this is relevant, I think, is because a lot of big organizations now understanding the importance of providing support for menopausal women in their organizations. Because we know that the timing of menopause, so women in their early 50s, for example, they're often at the peak of their career, doing the best work that they've ever done, and then suddenly they're floored by the menopause. And I know friends even who have had such bad menopause symptoms that they've said, well, I can't work anymore, I'm going to stop. And we know that many women take early retirement because of menopause symptoms. And this causes a huge organizational cost. You have to train somebody to replace the women who leave. There's a lot of time taken off in sick leave, which costs the organization. And so a lot of big organizations now in the UK are starting to provide menopause support. But what sort of support an organization provides, obviously, is really... it's important to know what symptoms, and it's always an individual thing. But if, for example, the majority of women in a particular area don't get hot flushes, there's no point in an organization providing loads of fans, is there? So it's important to understand, both from an individual woman, what she's going through, but also just generally what happens to menopausal women in this society, so that we can provide the right sort of support.
Can you talk more about GSM, including the effect on the bladder, and what treatments can help?
So GSM, or genitourinary syndrome of menopause, basically relates to the genital symptoms that many women who experience menopause get. Menopause symptoms overall are caused by estrogen deficiency. And there are estrogen receptors in cells all over the body. So there are estrogen receptors in the brain, which is why many women in menopause experience what's called brain fog, where they aren't able to concentrate, where they're very forgetful. The mood changes that affect many menopausal women are because of the loss of estrogen from the brain. The osteoporosis, as I mentioned, heart disease, estrogen receptors are in the skin, which is why women in menopause notice that their skin starts to change. And the skin of a 55-year-old woman is not the same as the skin of a 32-year-old woman. And that's because they've lost estrogen. Okay, apart from issues related to kind of sun damage and so on, but in general. And so there are loads of estrogen receptors in the genital tract everywhere. So in the vagina, in the bladder, everywhere. And so some women find that as menopause approaches and during menopause, they start to get urinary symptoms, they start to develop discomfort during sex, pain, sex becomes painful, and that's just because of loss of estrogen. So HRT overall will give you back the estrogen that's kind of being lost from the body, but HRT in the sort of traditional sense where you take an estrogen tablet or a patch or a gel with progesterone may not be enough to treat genital symptoms. For some women it is, but many women who have genital symptoms may need additional estrogen applied just locally to the genital area. So either usually as a cream or a vaginal tablet. And that helps with the bladder symptoms, and it also helps with feeling better during sex. And some people are just uncomfortable, not even related to sex, just you know, they get uncomfortable just walking around during the day. They notice discomfort down below. And so estrogen applied topically will help with that. But that's not enough. So estrogen applied topically is one thing. And then using vaginal moisturizers, the way you'd moisturize your skin, you moisturize the vaginal area as well. And that helps. And then using lubricants for set. And moisturizers are different from lubricants. Lubricants are just for set. And they help to, and it's important to use the right kind of lubricant, because what you want is a lubricant that is designed to mimic the vaginal secretions. And what happens when you use topical estrogen is that the cells that produce the vaginal moisture start to come back again. And so after a little while, some women no longer need to use so many moisturizers and lubricants. But one thing just to say is that although many women will not take HRT forever, they will often stop needing to take it. Although women, the guidelines now say that women should be able to take HRT for as long as they need to, that there shouldn't be any arbitrary guidelines that say at some point you should stop. But with genitourinary syndrome of menopause, many women will need to use topical estrogen for the rest of their life. And that's fine. It's not harmful to do that. The amount of estrogen in topical estrogen over the course of a year is equivalent to one estrogen tablet. It's tiny. And it's really only active locally. Very little is absorbed into the bloodstream. So some women who aren't able to take a full HRT regimen are still able to use topical estrogen.
Is it okay to take HRT forever? To just keep taking it?
We have a 90-year-old who's still taking it, who refuses, she's not living with HIV, she refuses to let us stop it. Most women don't need to take it for that long, but there are some women who, when they stop, their symptoms come back. Right. And this 90-year-old, she's a fully functioning 90-year-old. She does her own shopping, she lives on her own, she looks after herself. When she stops her HRT, she's just a vegetable in bed. And she goes, this is not acceptable for me. And for me, the most important reason to take HRT is about quality of life. So if the quality of a woman's life is so awful without HRT that she is that, you know, that she just thinks, well, it's not worth it anymore, then to me, as long as she is aware of any potential risk, she should be allowed to take it if she chooses to take it. Yeah. I don't think it's up to anybody to say you can't. If the quality of her life is so awful without it that she doesn't feel that she can function. But that's an individual conversation between women and the HRT prescriber. But I think, to me, that's the most important thing. For me, replacing the estrogen you're not producing anymore is the best way to treat menopause symptoms, because you're just doing what your body should be doing. Sorry, this is I'm going to answer this in a bit of a roundabout way. You know, the reason that menopause is now an issue is 200 years ago, a woman wasn't expected to see, or even 100 years ago, wasn't expected to live beyond the age of 43. So menopause was not a huge issue. You know, I mean, you know, we're biological beings. The reason for our existence is to multiply, to procreate. And, you know, early on, a woman would have her babies and then she'd basically die. But now with the extended life, so, you know, a woman at 43, she dies. She doesn't have time to experience menopause. But now a woman's, you know, the average age of a woman's lifetime now, a girl born now, she's expected to live to be 100. So if menopause happens at 45, she's going to be postmenopausal for a long time. And during a significant period of that time, she will have menopause symptoms. So we've got to be able to manage menopause symptoms in a way that lets women live long and healthy lives. Some women can't take HRT. And if they can't take HRT, then other medicines may be used to control individual symptoms. To me, that's not ideal, because if you can't, but for women for whom HRT will be harmful, that's the only thing they can do. But for women in whom there's no reason to think that HRT will be harmful, the most obvious thing to me to do is to just replace the estrogen that they're not replacing on their own. But yes, oxybutynin has been shown to be helpful for some menopause symptoms. So it would definitely be an option for women who, for example, couldn't take HRT or didn't want to.
A question here about osteoporosis and HIV. Do we know if that's more related to the years of certain ARVs or to HIV itself?
That some antiretrovirals affect bones and might make you more likely to develop osteoporosis. And so an understanding of that is important, and avoiding antiretrovirals that might reduce bone density or increase the risk of osteoporosis is really important.
What about arthritis? Is there any connection between arthritis?
So the connection, I think, between arthritis and menopause, I think there are two connections. The first is the connection between arthritis and getting older. So most arthritis, that people experience as they get older. So arthritis is just inflammation of the joint. And so, and the most common cause of inflammation of the joints is what's called osteoarthritis, which is basically wear and tear arthritis that happens as we get older, or if we use our joints a lot. So, you know, people, runners, for example. But there are estrogen receptors in joints, and many women complain of joint pain in the perimenopause and menopause. Whether that is just pain, or whether there are actually bony changes within the joints is, I think, not clearly understood, because we know that getting older, as I said, may also cause joint pain. But we know that women who have joint pain and who take HRT find that many of their symptoms, if not most of their symptoms, get better or go away completely, and that includes joint symptoms as well.
With taking HRT, is it better to take it just prior, like pre-menopause, or wait until you're actually having the hot flushes, you're getting the UTI infections, and then take it? What's the recommendation?
Okay, let's just one definition. So just the definition of menopause. So menopause, actually, even though it's used to describe a sort of long period of time, menopause is actually one day. Menopause is the day you have your last period. That's menopause. So the day after that last period, you are postmenopausal. But the thing is that on that day that you have that last period, you don't know at the time that it's your last period. So you can only diagnose the menopause retrospectively. So if a woman has not had a period for 12 months, that last period was her menopause. But people use the term menopause to refer to the menopause transition, which includes the perimenopause, which is the time that symptoms start, even if you're still having regular periods, to the time you have your last period. So if a woman has no symptoms at all, there's no evidence that starting HRT then will be of any benefit, because the fact that you have no symptoms at all means that you're producing enough estrogen to not be having symptoms. But there is an argument for when women start to have symptoms for starting HRT then. And the reason for that is that there is this what's called a window of opportunity. Remember I said that after the age of 60, the potential risks of HRT might start to slowly outweigh the benefits. Not for everybody, but the risk might be slightly more than before the age of 60. And that's because before the age of 60, your blood vessels are still under the influence of estrogen, even though the estrogen levels are going down. So what you're doing if you start HRT in the perimenopause is you're just maintaining those estrogen levels. So you're not actually, you actually haven't given your body the chance for the estrogen levels to go down. There is definitely a benefit to considering starting HRT as soon as you have symptoms.
When you're talking about UTIs before, that was why I went on to HRT. Mm. I had some of the hot flushes, which I could kind of deal with, and the emotional changes. But it was a UTI after UTI, and it was like I then started doing my own research, and then I spoke to my HIV specialist about it, and I said, well, can you check my hormone levels? Because I, you know, there's something going on here. I might be going through menopause. Yeah. And that was a real biggie for me, because it was just not pleasant to deal with. Yeah. And all the time.
And that comes back to the issue of mood. Because remember we were saying, so what is it, chicken stroke egg? Uh-huh. You know, so we know menopause causes problems with moods. But if your menopause symptoms are so awful that your life is miserable, uh-huh, then you have problems with your mood as well. So if you have symptoms, you need to go to the toilet all the time, you're just always uncomfortable down below, then your mood is definitely going to be a problem. So no, I can understand that. One thing just to say about levels. So a lot of women will say, oh, I want to have someone take my hormone levels to check whether I'm menopausal. The thing is that hormone levels in the perimenopause go up and down like this. So the guidelines now say if a woman is of the age of menopause, so I would say over the age of 45, and she has menopause symptoms, she is menopausal. Don't check her hormone levels, give her HRT. Because the hormones go up and down, if you were to take a hormone level at the time when the hormone levels were high, then you'd be told you're not menopausal, this can't be menopause. And so you may then end up having to wait a long time before your levels go down low enough for someone to check. So
it's interesting you say that, because that is exactly what happened to me. The first time they said, no, your hormone levels are fine. Yeah. And then I went back and I said, no, can you do it again? Yeah. Because there's something going on here that's not quite right.
Yeah. That's exactly right. And so if you're lucky, they measure them when it's low, but sometimes they're never low, because they're low in between your clinic visits. If it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it's a duck.
Yeah. Exactly. I just want to thank you so much, Nenka, for being here tonight and sharing all your expertise with us about menopause. We've all learned so much. I know I have. I want to thank you so much for being here and include the link to the guide to menopause for women living with HIV that was published by the Sophia Forum in the UK, which Nenka provided expertise on the writing of that guide. So I've looked through that. It's full of a lot of really helpful and really informative information. So download that guide and thank you again. Thank you so much, Nenka, for sharing your morning with us from London.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much to everyone for joining. Thank you, Heather. And thank you for your great questions. They were really, really fantastic.